Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Sweden has found itself caught between outrage over anti-Muslim actions and its commitment to free speech. In recent months, the Nordic country had seen an increase in protests where copies of the Quran have been torn and burnt, sparking outrage in countries such as Iran, Iraq and Lebanon. But why has this become the norm and what is the Swedish government doing about it? I'm joined on the line by Becky Waterton, Deputy Editor of The Local Sweden, Sweden's English language news, and also by Dr. Aminulla Dasandi, Head of Religions and Senior Lecturer in Contemporary Islam at UCC. Good morning to both of you. Becky, can I start with you, please? Why has there been an increase in incidents of burning the Quran in Sweden?
Yeah, so there's basically kind of two groups that have been doing this. The first one, I'd say, started last year. It was a Danish politician called Rasmus Paludan, who was essentially doing it for political reasons. He has a very far-right anti-immigrant party in Denmark, and he was trying to get into the Swedish parliament. So he was burning Qurans in kind of areas with very high Muslim populations to essentially provoke people. And then the newest kind of wave of Quran burnings is two separate people, like a separate group, two Iraqi activists called Salwan Najem and Salwan Mika, who are burning the Quran to kind of try and get it banned in Sweden. They're doing it as an anti-Islam protest.
Okay, and how has the state responded?
Well, it's a difficult position for the state to be in, because they've obviously come out and said that this is disrespectful, it's polarizing, they are not condoning it at all. But Sweden has extremely strong freedom of speech laws, so it's not actually illegal to burn the Quran. So that's kind of the issue that the state have been in. They can't ban it, but they also...
Okay. Yeah. So would it be illegal to say hateful or divisive things about the Quran, but not illegal to desecrate it?
It's complicated again. So Sweden has a law called Hets mot folkgrupp, which is essentially like agitation or incitement against an ethnic group. In some cases, it's illegal to burn the Quran if it's clear that you're doing it for racist reasons, is the argument. So Rasmus Paludan, going back to this Danish activist, he was burning it in these areas to specifically provoke people. He was calling kind of Middle Eastern countries low IQ countries. So that's very clearly illegal. That's kind of racist hate speech. But the argument is that There's a kind of a grey line in Swedish law about when it's illegal, when it's not illegal. No one's kind of officially come out and said, you cannot burn the Quran, that's illegal, or you can burn it, it's freedom of speech. So that's the issue that's with the law at the moment.
We saw in the most recent general election in Sweden that the far-right parties were outflanking parties of the centre. Is there a sense in which perhaps the state and those central parties are responding in a lukewarm fashion to this because they don't want to further platform an issue that is attractive to the far-right?
I think the problem, I think the problem is also that the current Swedish government is actually in power with the backing of the far right. So the far right aren't in government, but they're a supporting party in the government coalition. So I think it's also weighing up, like, criticising, you know, they don't want to come out on an issue completely on the opposite side of the spectrum as the far right, because that could mean that they lose their support in government.
Okay.
But then they also don't want to follow their line either.
Stay with us, Becky. I want to bring in Dr. Aminulla Dasandi now. Amin, we're talking about Sweden, but we might as well just be talking about here, because there is a far-right playbook or template here to take issues like this and to use them as a provocation.
Absolutely. Good morning. This is really worrying and quite concerning. But I think what we need to do is we need to think and reflect very carefully. There's a history of the desecration of the Quran, you know, and it goes back to 2010, when there was a Christian pastor named Terry Jones of the Dove World Outreach Center in Gainesville, Florida, who threatened to burn the Quran on the anniversary of September 11th and then went ahead and did that. There's also been allegations of desecration of the Quran in front of Muslim prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. And, you know, this kind of catalogue of kind of incidents that are emerging, particularly in Denmark and Sweden, are quite worrying. And they are coming from far-right party leaders such as Starmkurs in Denmark, who's, you know, calling on his supporters to urinate on the Quran since 2017. This is extremely worrying. The European Islamophobia Report does talk about a rise in Islamophobia in Europe. But let's look at the particulars here. The Quran is understood by billions of Muslims around the world as the word of God. It's understood as inimitable and divinely sacred. So it is being called out as Islamophobia as it goes against its reverence. And in fact, on July the 12th, the United Nations Human Rights Council passed a motion that called on countries to review their laws and plug the gap, a quote here, that may impede the prevention and prosecution of acts and advocacy of religious hatred. So there are good people who are speaking up against this. Unfortunately, it's been taken in many different ways.
Mm. Freedom of speech is, of course, a very liberal principle that is now, as we see, being taken and being exploited by the far right. How do you prevent that without in some way inhibiting that freedom of speech and denying it to everybody, not just those on the far right who would seek to exploit it?
You're absolutely right. And this is the issue. This is the moral and the ethical issue that we're all faced with. How do we uphold, you know, the idea or the freedom to act, the freedom to express, but also to work within the sensitivities and sensibilities of minorities? That's a very, very difficult thing to do. But we must listen to the voices of reason, such as the human rights chief Volker Turk, who told the UNHCR that inflammatory acts against Muslims as well as other religious minorities are offensive, irresponsible and wrong. So there are people speaking up who are making it very clear that we have a moral imperative to make sure that we should engage with texts rather than burn them. If I could just say, you know, on this day, it's very interesting that we're talking about the horrible act of burning books rather than reading them on the day that we have the funeral of Sinead O'Connor as she's being laid to rest here in Ireland. She herself spoke about her own Islamophobia and that turned to love as she read the Quran, especially chapter 2. We have a great example there. Nobody is stopping people to critique, question, and to ask difficult questions, but it is important not to desecrate, and I don't think it's the right way to go about burning texts at all.
No, of course not, but why is it that we're managing to tie ourselves up in knots over this? Surely an act of desecration is exactly the same as hate speech, or does it need to be specifically defined in law? Aman?
Sorry, it's very difficult. I think you know, we're going through our own, I was going to use the word reckoning, but we're going through our own issues here in Ireland of speaking about multiculturalism, multi-faith Ireland, and trying to be as inclusive and diverse as possible to the hate crime legislation that's passing, you know, through government. But I think it's very difficult. I think we still need to continually counter this. There are laws always in place to prevent people from doing things that would be not just illegal, but immoral and unethical. But people will continue to do that. I think people, you know, we need to continually, you know, keep speaking up and making sure that we uphold very, very high standards and not do things that are really just not helpful in building bridges. By burning books is just completely, you know, just wrong. It just seems very a very unusual act that I think people are kind of gaining traction. And I think, you know, as we heard there, it becomes a great way to gain supporters if you're party political. But we do know that party politics is often not on the side of good ethics and good morals. So it requires us all, every single individual, to continually speak up and say whether it's the Quran or the Bible, you know, any religious text need to be upheld, and we need to make sure that we preserve that at many different levels.
Becky, how are the government navigating their way through this?
Yeah, so they've not said flat out that they're going to make it illegal to burn the Quran, but what they are doing is they're looking at changing the public order law, which is the law that kind of decides whether you can accept or refuse an application for a protest. So currently, you can't refuse an application for a protest, even if the person submitting the application says they're going to do something illegal. But what they're looking at is potentially making it illegal, or they're potentially making it a reason which you can use to reject a protest application. So if someone says, I'm going to burn the Quran, then you can reject that application under this racism law.
That seems insane that it would require them to say something like that in order to be banned. Could they not also be banned from holding a protest if they have previously burned a Quran?
Not under the current laws, no, because under the current laws, the only way you can ban a protest in Sweden is if it's deemed to be a threat to public safety. And that's not just like a general threat, like, oh, it could raise the terror level or there could be riots somewhere else in the country. It has to be this specific protest. Something will happen at this specific protest which will threaten public safety. That is the only reason you can reject a protest application.
Does that mean that these two protest groups coming at this from very different reasons are able to also kind of claim the imprimatur of the state and say, well, you know, this protest was officially sanctioned by the state and here we are burning Qurans at it?
I mean, they have kind of done that, because what happened previously, so when this, going back to 2022, when Rasmus Paludan started doing this, the police actually... they started rejecting applications because they deemed there was a risk of riots. There were riots in 2022 around Easter when he started burning Qurans. And then that went to court, and the administrative court said, no, that's not a good enough reason. And then what's happened again is that they've started burning the Quran again, following this decision by the courts that you couldn't rule it, you couldn't ban it on that reason.
Aman, it really seems that for a change, because we so often look to the Scandi countries as an example of best practice, but the way that they're going about this is clearly not the way to do it.
Well, I think some of the news that's coming out from the official government position is quite hopeful. I mean, the Danish Foreign Ministry has said that such protests benefit extremists and pose a security threat. The Swedish government is categorising this as Islamophobic. I feel like the news that's come out today, where there are some Muslims who are standing in the streets passing out chocolates and offering a chat, you know, a peaceful response to Quran burnings. And I'd like to see more of that. So I think it's in time that we all sat and had chocolates and had a chat and stopped burning books.
I wasn't aware that was an element to it. Becky, have you seen much of that? Is that form of engagement proving successful?
Sorry, I actually lost connection a bit for a bit there. So I didn't
he
hear
was
all
just
that.
Saying that there are Muslims, there are those among the faithful who are actually attending these events and saying, no, 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 come and talk to me about Islam in a much more open way, and handing out chocolates, says Aman.
Well, I haven't heard about handing out chocolates, but I know that the Muslim population in Sweden have been handling this really, really well. I know one of the recent Quran burning events in Stockholm. It was outside a mosque. It was during the noon prayer. It was during the Eid al-Adha holiday, which is one of the kind of big holidays in Islam. There were kind of elderly members of the Muslim community saying to younger members of the community, oh, just come into the mosque, ignore them. You know, Islam is in your hearts. The Quran is in your hearts. This doesn't mean anything. They're just trying to provoke you. And I think kind of leaders of the Muslim you know, imams in Sweden and stuff have been really open with kind of explaining, this isn't Islam, we're not like this, we just want to be able to practice our religion in peace, which I think is a fair point, really.
Becky Waterston, thank you very much. Final question to you on this, Aman. Do you get tired? Do mainstream Muslims, if there is such a thing, as, you know, centre of the road opinion, Muslim faithful, not get tired of having to constantly explain their faith and explain that it is not a religion of hate?
It does get tiring, but on this side, you know, thankfully, touch actually Muslims who are doing the hate, it's coming from other sections. I think I see this in a way we're pulling it together, where we all want to get on, we want to build bridges to make sure that we highlight, you know, voices that are countering this hate. And I think it's very difficult. It's not as easy as saying, you know, just put a law out there or just issue a statement. It requires a constant grappling. It requires a constant, the tension will always exist. The difficulty is when we have shared spaces, there's always going to be a difficulty in sharing that space. But it requires us to constantly be having this conversation, because I think it's really important for us to be having it here in Ireland so that we don't have this in our streets. We don't want that in our streets to be happening. But you know, I think there are many of my co-religionists are very tired. Fortunately, I'm very privileged. I to do this work, and I'm very lucky to have this platform, and thank you for having me on your show.
Indeed, thank you very much for talking to us, Dr. Aminullah Desanti and Becky Waterton. And